Still in Perek Chavches, still in chapter 28. Probably will be for some time, the way this Perek is shaping up. Very exciting Perek. We know that Shaul has sought Hashem in different places, has not found Hashem. We talked about the different places Shaul went. We talked about the Urim V'Tumim, talked about the prophets, and talked about the dreams. And he goes looking for an Ov. And we talked about what exactly an Ov is. We don't know what exactly an Ov is, but we gave some information at any rate. And they identified an Ov in a place called Ein Dor. And I noted last time that I didn't know where Ein Dor was, so I did a little bit of looking around. It seems that Ein Dor is about 27 kilometers north of Gilboa, about 10 kilometers east-northeast from Shunem. Remember, the Plishtim are camped in Shunem. The Jews are camped in Gilboa, which is significantly south of Shunem. So they're all in the same region. But what interests me about it is that going to Ein Dor means going near the Plishtim. Right? If you can picture the triangle, and I didn't put the map in the end on the sheet, maybe I should have, but if you can picture the triangle of it, the Jews are in the south, the Plishtim are in the north, and this place is actually closer to where the Plishtim are than it is to where the Jews are. It's north and east, so it's, that's really what I wanted to get across, is that he's actually endangering himself, to a certain extent by going to Ein Dor, but he really wants to have this conversation with an Ov. He went on a campaign to get rid of the Ovot. He has an Ov here, and that's where he's going to, go. There's a lot of noise behind me from the hallway. I hope that, that you can hear what I'm saying. I can barely hear what I'm saying. But the noise is going to stop soon because the bell just rang, and so all the students get to go to their classrooms. Okay, so last time when we concluded this section of Shaul identifying the Ov and going to the Ov and saying, you know, I want to use your services, and she says, no way, the king is not allowing that, and he says, don't worry, you're going to be all right. We then identified problematic midrashim that I want to come back to and explain it now. So take a look at source number one on your sheet. This is the Medrash in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. The halach el Ein Dor, el Isha Sefania. He went to Ein Dor to a woman named Sefania, imo shel Avner, the mother of Avner, his general, ushalah ba'ov. And he asked of her the oath. That's the Medrash. The Medrash tells us that the Ov is named Sefania, and that the Ov is Avner's mother. Now, there is zero hint of any Sefania, in this story. The Sefania we know from Tanakh as a prophet who lives significantly later, like centuries later, and happens to be a male. So, where do we get this idea that the Ov would be named Sefania? What would you say? Oh, come on. It's a logical thing. It's not... excuse me. So close. Sofet. Sofet is to scout, to see something from far away. Right? That Sofet is the scout, the visionary, so she is the Sofet. It is interesting that you get Safun for something which is hidden, and I think there is a link there. But that's in terms of the name, it seems like we're just, you know, so much so that when the language of the Medrash in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer says El Isha Sefania, that isn't quite saying a woman named Sefania. It doesn't say her name was Sefania. A woman Sefania, I sort of wonder about that. The grammar is strange. I don't know. Worth thinking about. But she's also, surprise, Avner's mother. We have no hint of that in the story either that we can see. So where did you get this? So part of it might be the law of conservation of biblical personalities. I quoted that before from Rabbi Yaakov Ellman. The idea that people you encounter, generally speaking, are people you've encountered before or are related to people you've encountered before. Every time we see somebody anonymous, we assume they're related. My father likes to send us Parsha questions for Shabbos. So one of his questions this week was, this past week was the identity of the mother of Avraham's donkey, right, that they used when they went to the Akedah. What was the identity of the father of Avraham's donkey? So usually he gives us the source for his answer. Here he didn't put it on the page, but the answer was Bilam's donkey. Because Bilam's donkey is a female donkey, and Bilam's donkey is around from the time of Bereishis, right? The Piha Asod is created in the beginning. So, it's the law of conservation of biblical donkeys as well. So, in this case, what we are suggesting is that, that this is Avner's mother. But I think there's more to it than that. I think it helps us answer certain questions about the story. For example, how is it that this Ov is still alive? Shaul got rid of the Ovot. And she said so. So if Shaul got rid of the Ovot, why in the world is she here? Especially if, when Shaul asks his men for an Ov, they know about her. Right? She's known to them. So I don't understand. If she's known to them, then she's not hiding very well. It must be that they knew before. How in the world did she survive? So Rav David Luria, in source number 2, Rav David Luria writes a commentary on Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer, in fact makes that suggestion. He said, first he gives him a different suggestion, which I didn't even bring, I wasn't going to say it, but actually it's in there, so we'll bring it, fine. V'yesh lomar remez ledavar, you could say there's a hint to it. Sefania imo shel avner ole begematria zu, balas o be'ein dor. He says, the gematria of Sefania, mother of Avner, is the same as the Ov in Ein Dor. Now, as you see in the parentheses, that's not quite so. I didn't actually do the math, but the Bar Ilan CD-ROM has a handy tool for gematrias. And they'll show you passages in Tanakh that match a particular gematria that you give them. So I just put in these clauses and got 853 and 856. So, I don't know. They're close. Gematria doesn't have to be precise. But anyway, I'm going past that to this next point. He says, Gam lachein nishara velohe misa Shaul, mibnei shasa imo shal avner sartzeba'o ve'eshez nerach yaviv shal Shaul. This is how she had survived the purge, even though they knew who she was. The answer is, first of all, she's Avner's mother. And second, you will recall that Avner is actually Shaul's nephew. First cousin. Avner is Shaul's first cousin. Avner's father is Ner. Shaul's father is Kish. And Kish and Ner are brothers. You saw that back in chapter 14. If you wanted to go back and look at it, you could see chapter 14, sentence 51. That was where we were introduced to this relationship. So she is relative of the general, and she is Shaul's relative. And that's how she survived, and it also answers how they knew who she was. And that's why the servants knew that she was an Ov. Because Shaul's servants, we're going to come back to this, the two men who accompany him are Avner and Amasa. I want to come back to that. I'm not doing that right now. That's one reason to say it's Avner's mother, is because it explains how everybody knows about her, and yet she survived the purge. By the way, he also adds a parenthetical note. Ubevadai haya Avner moche biyadah shelo tisaseik bekach. Certainly, Avner protested and said, "Hey, Ma, you should get out of this line of work." It's not like he just said, "You're going to survive as an Ov." He told her, "Stop doing Ov things." Rak atal tzivui Shaul hamelech asta. But now she's doing it because Shaul commands her to do so, but otherwise she's out of business. That's the point that he makes here. It also answers a second question. You already saw that Radal quotes what we're going to see, that Shaul's two men who accompany him are Avner, his general, and Amasa, who is also going to be a general. Well, if Shaul doesn't want to be recognized, is it really smart for him to bring these two men, right? But the answer is yes, because even if she recognizes him, she'll listen to her son, Avner. the other note would be the question of, yeah, but what if he's recognized by somebody else? Because we did talk about him not wanting to be seen going in and going at night and all of that. Not sure how that's going to help. Okay. And then the third question this answers is, why does she actually believe when Shaul says, don't worry, I'm not going to hurt you? Right? When Shaul says it in the beginning, he says, you're not going to be harmed, so she doesn't know who he is. But after she finds out who he is, like, why doesn't she run away in fear? Why is she okay with it? So Radal continues to say, Rav David Luria continues to say, Gam lachin ha'amina v'divrei Shaul, ki lo yikra avon v'davar zeh. She believes that that nothing's going to happen to her. Ki b'na Avner, shaya imo sham, hifticha kacha. Her son Avner tells her, don't worry, Mom, it's going to be okay. So that's why she trusts that she's going to be safe. It's a very interesting idea. The other piece of it, the other medrash that we need to work on, is this business of the two men who accompany Shaul being Avner and Amasa. Because that's strange also. That does not appear in Pirkei de Rabbi Eliezer. That shows up in Vayikra Rabbah, source number 3. Amar Rabbi Evo. Rabbi Evo says, Shnayim asu kishura. Two people did what is proper. Avraham v'Shaul. Avraham and Shaul did what is proper. What do you mean? Talking about taking an escort with you. Going back to the Akedah, last week's Parsha, Avraham, it says, Vayikacha shnei ne'aravimo. He took his two youths with him. V'Shaul vayelechu shnei anashimimo. And with Shaul, he went and he took two men with him. Ze Avner va'amasa. That's Avner and Amasa. And once again, we have to ask the question, why should his two men be Avner and Amasa? Right? He's the king. He's got lots of men. Why are we going to assume that it's Avner and Amasa? So the answer again is, it helps us because it answers questions for us. First of all, it answers the question of, why did you specify that he brought two men? Why'd you bother mentioning that in the psukim? Like, they don't matter. I'm not taking questions or comments yet. Not till the end of the section. But why did you specify that he brought two men? The answer is, it's a specific pair of men. It's not just any two men. It also helps answer, why did you bring anybody if you didn't want publicity for what you're doing? And the answer is, they are generals. Because his whole point in this trip is not, this is not a David trip. This is a trip about the war effort. Help me, tell me what's going to happen in my war. And maybe what he's trying to do is to help gain their confidence in the military enterprise. We've seen that before. I gave you references on the sheet in source number 4. Bonus points to anyone who recognizes those. The first one is from Shmuel Aleph Perek Yudalid. That's the story with Yehonasan and his aide. Yehonasan wants to attack the Plishti outpost. And he says to the aide, we'll see what Hashem says. If they say this, then we'll do this. If they say that, we'll know Hashem is on our side, right? So that's what Shaul may be doing here. And the other example is from Shoftim with Gidon, where Hashem tells Gidon, when Gidon is going to fight against Midian, he tells Gidon, who is afraid, to go to the camp of Midian the night before, and he hears them talking about their dreams and how frightened they are. Or there's one soldier here is talking about his dream and how frightened he is of Gidon and the Jews. And Gidon goes along with his aide, Pura. So you again see this idea of giving messages to the people involved in order to inspire them with confidence. Maybe that's why Shaul would want to bring Avner and Amasa specifically as the two men. There's also an added note regarding Avner and Amasa that would fit this very nicely. You may recall Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 25. It was a long time since chapter 25. It was sometime last year. But when we learned that story, when Doeg tells David, not chapter 25, I'm sorry, chapter 22, Perek Chaf Beis, not Perek Chaf Hei, chapter 22. So that's a really long time ago. When Doeg tells Shaul that the people of are a threat, that they help David, or specifically Ahimelech helped David. And Shaul wants to wipe out the city of Nov. He first turns to his Anashim. He turns to his men. And the Yerushalmi tells us who are the men he turns to? None other than Avner and Amasa. And they refuse, you'll recall. But take a look at source number 5. I brought you, it's Yerushalmi in Sanhedrin, and it's also Medrash in Tehillim. I brought you the Medrash version. Amar Shlomo. Shlomo said in Koheles, Shomer mitzvah lo yeda davar ra. Someone who guards the mitzvah will not know any evil. Ze Avner va'amasa, shelo hinichu lingoa v'kohanim. That's Avner and Amasa, who did not allow Shaul to harm the Kohanim, and then, of course, Doeg did what he did. But maybe saying that Avner and Amasa are the two people he trusts for missions, you know, there, leads me to also make the same suggestion here. So we have two midrashim. I went through this a little quickly, but summing up, we have two midrashim. One midrash says the Ov is actually Avner's mother. And we said there's no evidence of it in the Psukim, but maybe it helps explain some things about the story. So it's a medrash which is not picking up on nuances in the text as much as nuances in the story and trying to make sense of it. And then the other, that the two men with Shaul are Avner and Amasa, which also may help to answer certain questions. I have to admit difficulty with the first medrash. The idea that it's the mother of Avner. Because really, if it's the mother of Avner, why didn't the text name her? Right? If you really believe that it's the mother of Avner and that this is important for the story because it explains how they knew about her and it explains that, you know, why she trusted and, like, then you should have told us it was Avner's mother. It's strange that you're just omitting that. And don't tell me you're omitting it for Avner's honor. Because Avner is going to come in for dishonor in the story ultimately, not this story, but in general, like, you're not sparing him. I have difficulty with that idea. So problem number one, a problem that I have with that medrash is that she should be named if it's really her. In terms of the second medrash, Abarbanel really doesn't like the idea that Shaul brought with him Avner and Amasa, and specifically and especially Avner. Take a look at sources 6 and 7. He has two problems. He says, first of all, number 6, Virachoku. He says, this is remote. This is unlikely. She'im hayakein, if that were so, Haisa makira es Shaul. She would have identified Shaul. Meaning, your son walks in the door. You know he's the general of the king. It ain't rocket science. V'kol shkeinim hayu beit an Hashem ha'olchim im Shaul Amasa ve'Avner k'divrei Chazal. And especially if the two men are Avner and Amasa, like, she can do the math. That's number one. And number two, in source number 7, Va'amru shishneho anashim hayu Amasa ve'Avner, they say that these men are Amasa and Avner. Kvar kasavti shirachoku, he says, I already told you in source number 6 that this is unlikely. Ki eich yetze ha-melech men ha-machane v'lo yishaer Avner shama ha-sara tzava. He says, if the king is leaving the military camp, he leaves the general in charge. He doesn't take the general with him. So Abarbanel, being very sort of practical about it, is not comfortable with the second medrash. He has these two objections to the second medrash, that it's Avner and Amasa. He seems to be okay with the idea that the Ov is Avner's mother. That he seems to be all right with. Okay, questions and comments on these two medrashim and what we've said about them. Ricky and then Alina.
I'm glad I waited because Abarbanel said exactly what I was going to say, that she would recognize Shaul, and especially since she's related to him.
Yeah, she's also a relative of Shaul. That would be then.
That's fine. So Abarbanel spoke for me. Thank you.
Excellent. That's why that's one of the reasons I ask people to wait, because often the ideas do come out. Alina.
Absolutely. I have a question more about Amasa, because from what I remember, he's related to David. Isn't he David's nephew or Yoav's cousin? So my question is, why would Shaul trust him to be one of his men? It just seems unlikely to me.
It's very interesting. He absolutely is involved with David. He will end up being general for Avshalom. So there's stuff going on with Amasa, and I don't quite get the relationships here and Amasa's role, and it's something that ultimately, God willing, we'll get to the story with Avshalom and Shmuel Beis. We're going to have to understand more about Amasa, but as of now, I can't answer it. I think it's a good point. Yeah. Nanette?
I actually thought that the reason that Saul was accompanied by two courtiers was it was about the woman's honor. When you know, the statement of where he disguised himself and he goes to the woman at night, I mean, immediately, for me, it was about her reputation.
That's fascinating.
And the fact that he disguises himself. And so it was about, you know, having two other people when he's alone with this woman. And so it was about her reputation. And so there could be a question about why those two individuals were brought. Mm-hmm. And perhaps, again, it would potentially speak to her honor.
That's very interesting, Annette. That is a sensibility that we see elsewhere. You know, we talk about the idea in Shoftim of Devorah, only taking visitors under the palm tree, which has no branches to obscure them in order that there should be no suspicion and stuff. So it is a sensibility we see elsewhere. I have not seen any of the commentators on this story pick up on it in that way, but I think it's a fascinating point. Both in terms of saying having two escorts with him, and in terms of the idea that one of the escorts is her son. So, I hear you. Thank you. I saw another hand. Eti.
Only a heretic.
Heretic. Sorry, go on.
I have a really big problem with these rabbis sitting and inventing whole stories that don't even have a hint inside the Zupi.
Why?
Because they're inventing stories that aren't there.
So now answer your question. No, I hear your question. What's the answer?
I don't know. They had nothing better to do than invent stories.
No, that's not going to cut it. That's not going to cut it at all.
Okay.
I'm on a Zoom. I'm sorry. Just somebody was trying to come into the room. So what they're doing here is trying to explain the story in light of questions that the reader has to be asking. Meaning, there are logical questions like the ones that we raised. Why does she trust that she won't be harmed? Questions of how she survived Shaul's purge and yet was known. And what they're trying to do with these answers is to float suggestions to deal with logical problems in the story, much like elsewhere, they'll float suggestions to deal with textual problems that you'll have. Why this word, why not that word, and so on. They're not making the claim that this is the definitive historical, you know, version of events. They're making a suggestion. Reb Shimshon Raphael Hirsch wrote a fantastic book called Horeb, or Horev, but it wasn't written in Hebrew, so I can just as easily call it Horev. It was written in German, in which he goes through the Torah's mitzvahs, and he gives explanations, and it's a beautiful book, very, very worth reading. And in his introduction at one point, he talks about the difference between what's called in Aramaic Shmaita and Agadata, or Agada. Shmaita are halachic teachings that we have received by tradition. This is the law. This is deduced from a pasuk. This is the law we've been doing since Sinai, whatever. Shmaitza. Then you have Agadata. And he says Agadata is everything else. And he says anyone is entitled to make a suggestion of Agadata, to read a pasuk and say, well, I have a problem. Maybe we could solve the problem this way. Here's an answer. As long as you don't contradict the canon of Torah that is there. So, you know, if someone were to say, I don't understand how Abraham could be willing to sacrifice his son. The answer is, Yitzhak wasn't really his son. Yitzhak was actually Avimelech's son. So that obviously contradicts the text. It's a funny suggestion, but it doesn't fit the text at all. It doesn't work. You can't just say, well, here's my thought. However, if you can say something that doesn't contradict what you see elsewhere and helps solve a problem, so you floated a suggestion. It doesn't mean it's right. It means it's a suggestion. That's the way that I would look at that, and that's why Abarbanel feels very comfortable disagreeing. You know, Abarbanel says, Rachoku. He says, I'm sorry, that's really unlikely. And he gives you his arguments against it. I gave a series of classes on Medrash Rabbah on the Akedah. And I think it was there that in the beginning, I brought sources which discuss the nature of Midrash. And there are different kinds of Midrashim. There are Midrashim of Halacha, there are Midrashim of Agada, there are Midrashim that are presenting you, yes, this is what God wanted to say with the Pasuk, and there are Midrashim that are just amplifying and explaining a story. There are Midrashim that are earlier, and there are Midrashim that are later. You can't equate all of them. It's a more complex field than that, and I think that helps feed some of the confusion that people feel. But I'm going to go into one more Midrash of interest, which casts Shaul's act in an interesting light. And we've already seen this Midrash. It's the one in number 3. The Midrash that said that that Abram had 2 youths, and the Midrash that said that Shaul has 2 men, and that's Abner and Amasa. The Midrash is linking 2 stories. Right? It's linking Abraham at the Akedah and Shaul here. It's fascinating. Especially fascinating to me because Rashi, on the Akedah, in Parshas Vayera, when Abram takes the 2 men, Rashi says, we see that you shouldn't go out alone, you're an important person, you should have 2 escorts. Rashi doesn't mention Shaul. He only mentions that Abraham did it. Rashi chooses to decouple these stories. So I think what's going on here, by putting the 2 of them together, is that it's providing an interesting contrast. Meaning, Abraham is on a mission from God to kill his son, and he asks nothing about the future. God said, do it? He doesn't say, well, how's this going to turn out? What's going to happen in the end? He simply goes. Shaul is on a mission from Hashem to fight the Plishtim, and he goes and asks an ov about the future. Abram takes escorts in order to go do what Hashem told him to do. Shaul takes escorts in order to go to an ov to ask, well, where is this going to take me? What's going to happen? So I think that may be what the Midrash is doing here by bringing the 2 of them. Both of them acted kishura. They acted properly in bringing escorts, but look at where one's going and look at where the other one is going. So to sum up where we are in the story, Shaul finds an ov who might be a person of special status and closeness to Shaul. Shaul might have his generals, Abner and Amasa, along, which again would make sense if it's a military question, and he wants to maybe, strengthen their resolve. And the Ov is about to summon Shmuel on behalf of Shaul. In the process, she's going to figure out that it's Shaul. And here, we're just going to see the beginning of the Ov experience. We're going to see the Ov do something, and then we're going to get the message from Shmuel, and after that I'm going to want to discuss the question. We're not going to get to it this week, but is this real? Is she actually summoning the ghost of Shmuel? We already discussed it in a small way last week. We saw Barbanel's view, some of you may remember, but there's a lot to be said about this. Also, the psukim we're about to read are going to raise certain questions about the soul and about life after death. It's going to be, there are questions that we're going to have. So once we get through this small section, sentences 11 to 14, then I'm going to try to address some of those life after death questions that it's going to raise. So what it means is just hold off on asking me some of the questions that are logically going to come to mind, because I do hope to address them. Okay, good? Okay, Pasuk Yud Aleph, sentence 11. Vatomer ha'isha es mi alelach. So the woman says, whom shall I call for you? Right? The switchboard operator. Whom shall I call? Vayomer es Shmuel ha'alili. And he says, Shmuel. No last name. Right? Can you give me a phone number? Like, Shmuel. That's it. How in the world does she know who she's supposed to summon? Like, how does she even know that? Well, we're gonna have to come back to that. We'll read the psukim first. Vatera ha'isha is Shmuel. She sees Shmuel. I guess it worked. Vatizak bekol gadol. And she cries out in a loud voice. Vatomer ha'isha el Shaul. And she says to Shaul, Lemor, lama ribi sani ve'ata Shaul. Why did you trick me? You're Shaul. How did she figure that one out? She saw Shmuel. She knows it's Shaul. Pretty good. Vayomer la ha'melech al tiri'i. And the king says to her, don't be afraid. Kima ra'is, what have you seen? Vatomer ha'isha el Shaul, and she says to Shaul, Elohim ra'isi olim min ha'aretz. The word Elohim, as it is used here and on your source sheet, you'll see it, is not a reference to God. She is not saying, I saw God coming out of the ground. She saw Shmuel. Elohim is a word that is used frequently in Tanakh, including in Chumash, to mean a powerful being, particularly a powerful person. Right? The classic example that all the commentators bring is the pasuk that says, Elohim lo sekalel, which means don't curse a leader. Don't curse a leader, don't curse a judge. There are various psukim that do that. So she says, I saw somebody powerful ascending from the earth. Vayomer lah ma ta'aro. And he says to her, what does he look like? Vatomer ish zakein ole. I saw an old man coming up. V'hu otem me'il, and he was wearing a me'il. We've talked a lot about this me'il before. Vayeda Shaul ki Shmuel hu. And Shaul knew, this is Shmuel. Vayikod apayim arza vayishtachu, and he bows low to the ground. Fascinating. Okay, so there's a lot going on, clearly, in these psukim. So first of all, let's go back to Pasuk Yud Aleph. How does she know whom to summon? Well, it depends on how you understand the way that Ov works. If you can, pretend to understand it at all. But that's another story. So we're going to see Ralbag on one hand and Abarbanel on the other. Ralbag says she doesn't know. She's told to bring up Shmuel. And sure enough, it's Shmuel Hanavi. But as far as she knows, it's Shmuel from down the block. It's not, there is no information. Because, and this is really important, I'll explain it now because otherwise you'll be totally confused. Ralbag's view is that the Ov, or the Baalat Ov, is a facilitator. The actual prophecy, or whatever it is generated by the person who inquires of the Ov. Even though the Ov sees it. Somehow or other, Shaul is actually the one who is going to generate this, not her. She's just the go-between. So she doesn't need to know who is being summoned. As far as Rabagi is concerned. She asked him who. I don't know why she asked him, but she asked him who. And then she went and did whatever it is that she does. And lo and behold, what do you know? Shmuel Hanavi. Back Shmuel. Take a look at source number 8. Ralbag. V'yidmeh. It appears. Ki achar sha'asta ma sha'asta la'awir ze'akesem. After she did whatever it was that she did in order to start this process. Nisbarer la mihuzeh asher ha'el sa'osa. Then it became clear to her whom she had brought up. V'sha'asho'el mimena zehu sha'ul. And that the person who was asking was Shaul. We still don't know how she knew that it was Shaul. That's why she screamed when she saw who it was. Now she knew, oh wait, this was Shmuel, the Shmuel. Not just some guy named Shmuel. And she understood that it was Shaul. He does not explain here. We will come back to it. How she knows that this is Shaul, we're going to come back to that. Abarbanel says that's nonsense. Because Abarbanel believes that the Ov is generated by her. She is the one who is summoning somebody. It's not that the this is coming through the petitioner. So he says, that can't be. Take a look at number 9. Abarbanel says, V'sha'ul amar she'ala es Shmuel Hanavi. Shaul said to bring up Shmuel Hanavi. V'yadua shahaya Shmuel nodala nevi Hashem b'chol Yisrael. Everybody knows Shmuel. When you say Shmuel, there's only one person you could possibly mean. It had to be this one. He doesn't need a last name. V'epalelbag. And he says, I am shocked at Ralbag. Shekasav shechashvaha isha shaya Shmuel acher lo Shmuel Hanavi. Writing that she thinks it's some other Shmuel. No, absolutely, absolutely not. Then what is she shocked by? So Abarbanel will say she's not shocked by seeing it's Shmuel. She's shocked by figuring out that this is Shaul. That's why she screams in a loud voice. Okay, that's step one. Shaul requests Shmuel. Maybe she knows it's Shmuel Hanavi. Maybe she does not know. And she calls up Shmuel, recognizes him, and realizes this is Shaul, and she says, Elohim Olim, powerful person. Note the verb used to ascend is Olim, plural, and the reason for that is because the word Elohim is a plural word, right? There's only one God, but the word Elohim is a plural word. We usually render it as Baal HaKochot Kulam, the one who possesses all forms of power. That's also the pshat answer to the question of why, when Hashem wants to create humanity, it says, Vayomer Elokim na'aseh Adam. We will make man. Because Elokim is a plural word. Then you have to go through everywhere in the Torah where it uses the word Elokim and see whether it uses singular or plural in the terms associated with it. And I wish you luck. Have fun. But that's the way, that's pshat in this. Elokim is really the term that we use, even when it's just one, and Olim goes along with it. However, there's the Gemara in Chagiga. Eti, you should close your ears, because I'm not going to call you a heretic again. But the Gemara in Chagiga in source number 10 has a different take. Rabbi Elazar kimati lahai kra bachi. When Rabbi Elazar would reach the following verse, he would cry, and it's the verse that we actually haven't seen yet. So take a look at Pasuk Tezvav, sentence 15. Shmuel's first statement to Shaul is, Lama hirgadz tani lahalos osi. Why did you scare me bringing me up? Why did you agitate me bringing me up? So the Gemara says, Shmuel is afraid. Why would Shmuel be afraid? Because he thinks it's judgment day. The neshama is not supposed to be called out of wherever it is, doing whatever it's doing, until Yom Hadin, until the Day of Judgment. And that's why he's afraid. He gets summoned, he thinks, they want me for judgment. So now go back to the Gemara. That's why Rabbi Elazar cries. He says, Umash Shmuel HaTzadik, Hayam Misyari Min Adin, if the great Shmuel, no, Ruth, I'm not taking questions now. If the great Shmuel was afraid of judgment, Anu al achas kama v'kama. How afraid must we be of the day of judgment? And the Gemara says, Shmuel maihi. Where do you see that Shmuel was afraid? How do you know that Shmuel was so afraid of the day of judgment? Because dichsiv, the text says, olim, ascending, plural, trei mashma, more than just Shmuel. Chad Shmuel, one of them was Shmuel. Ve'idach, and then the other, da'azal Shmuel va'asye le'moshe bahadei. Shmuel went to bring in the big guns. Who is Shmuel going to think is the big guns? Shmuel's the big gun. Shmuel is Rabban Shel Nevi'im. Well, the answer is, he brings Adon HaNevi'im, Av HaNevi'im. He brings in Moshe. And why Moshe? Amar Leh, he says, Dilma chas v'shalom ledina in misba'ina. Maybe, God forbid, I'm being summoned for judgment. Kum bahadoi, stand with me. Deleka milfa de kasas ba'oraisa de lo kiyamte. There's nothing that you wrote in the Torah that I did not fulfill. So I want Moshe with me to testify on my behalf. I want Moshe as my aid, he says. There's a slightly different version in the Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah in source number 11 that adds the possibility, tzadikim alo imu ba'osa shah, just general tzadikim, stood with him. So what the Medrash is suggesting is that Shaul was afraid. The Malbim gives another element in the Pasuk that supports this idea. Although I have to say, I don't necessarily go with it. It depends on something we said a long time ago. But I'll give it to you the way he does. Malbim points out that the text said in Pasuk Yudalid, she saw Ish Zakein Oleh. She saw an old man ascending. Shmuel died at what age? 52, according to the Gemara, right? Abarbanel has a different timeline. He thinks he's much older. Rabag with Abarbanel. But Malbim says if Shmuel is only 52 years old, he's not going to look old. So Ish Zakein is a reference to Moshe, which is a fascinating idea. The only problem that I have, and we discussed this ages ago, is that the view that says he dies at the age of 52 is a Gemara in Tannis. And in that Gemara, they specifically mentioned that back in chapter 8, sentence 1, it said that Shmuel was Zakein, right? If you flip back for a second to chapter 8, sentence 1, Vayihi ka'asher Zakein Shmuel. It was when Shmuel was Zakein. Right? Shmuel was Zakein. So, how do you understand that? The Gemara says that Shmuel is made to look older than he really was. He ages prematurely in order that he should... he ages prematurely in order that people not say that Hashem took him when he was young because he had sinned. You remember the whole story? Right? You remember the story from then? We said that Shmuel dies at that point because he doesn't want to see his handiwork, Shaul, destroyed. He doesn't want to see Shaul die. So he has to die before Shaul does. But then he's going to look like he was a wicked person. So then people are going to interpret that. So therefore, no, make it look like it was just old age. So in that case, Malbim is incorrect, because then he was Zakein, and Ish Zakein can be him. If you didn't follow that, don't worry about it. But key point out of this Gemara, which we're going to come back to, I said we have certain philosophical questions to discuss. One of those questions is, are you telling me that Shmuel was not aware of what was going on in this world? Do people know what's going on here once they've passed away? Does he know or not? So that's one of the questions I want to come back to. Okay, so this is Shmuel. She says, it's Elohim Olim, that's Shmuel. How does she know it's Shmuel? Because of the Me'il in sentence 14. But how does she know, and I'm going to come back to it when we discuss 14 shortly. How did she know, though, that it was Shaul? What told her that this was Shaul? So you know it's Shmuel. How do you know it's Shaul? So we get two answers. One from the Medrash, and the other one from Abarbanel, because Abarbanel isn't sitting with the Medrash. Take a look at the Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah. It's in source number 12. V'chininayin haisa yodas shahu Shaul. How did she know this kid? This is Shaul talking to her. Elalo kishem she'olela hedyot hu olela melech. The answer is because when a spirit is called up for a regular person, it ascends one way. When it's called up for a king, it ascends differently. Lahedyot ole panav lamata. For a hedyot, it shows up face down. Velamelech panav lamala. For a king, in honor of the king, he shows up face up. That's a neat idea. One of the mefarshim on this says, tell me, how often do you think kings summoned people that she would know this? But maybe she has a mesorah. She has a mesorah from the Ovot that this is how it works. Very, very strange. I forget who said that. I think it might be Abarbanel. It would be his type of question. Radak says this is based on the text when she says that. What do you mean? Look at source number 13. Mara'it sheikart shani Shaul. He says when Shaul asks, what did you see? He's asking, how did you know who I am? Vatomer ha'isha, and the woman said, Elohim ra'isi olim min ha'aretz, I saw Elohim ascending from the ground. Ra'isi adam gadol olim min ha'aretz, I saw a great man ascend from the ground, meaning raglav klapei ha'aretz. His legs were towards the ground. Masha'eno min ha'olam, that's not the normal way. Lefichach yadati ki Shaul hamelech ata v'lichvodcha alachein. So I knew, you're Shaul, and in your honor, he's descending in this way. So the Medrash in Vayikra Rabbah thinks that when a ghost is summoned for a king, the ghost shows up differently. Abarbanel says that's not what it's about. That's not it. Abarbanel says, look again at sentence 14. It says, Vayeda Shaul kishmuel hu vayikod apayim arza vayishtahu. Shaul knew it was Shmuel, and he bowed low to the ground. Who bowed to whom? He said, I would have read it as Shaul bowed to Shmuel. But Abarbanel says no, because Shaul can't see Shmuel. If Shaul could see Shmuel, he wouldn't have had to ask her, what does he look like? Right? So he says, Abarbanel says, it's not that that Shaul is bowing to Shmuel, and you could still say he bowed because he knew that Shmuel was present, but that's not the way he takes it. He says, no, this is Shmuel bowing to Shaul. And the woman realizes it's Shaul, because who else would Shmuel bow to? Take a look at source number 14. Va'achshovani, I think sheShmuel hishtachavel Shaul mipnei kavod amalchus. Shmuel bowed to Shaul because of the honor of the throne. V'hi kvar yada shu'a yashmuel ki Shaul tzivala shetalalo Shmuel. She knew this was Shmuel. Shaul told her to bring up Shmuel. V'im kol zera saw so mishtachave apayim arza. She saw him bowing. Amra bem is there Shaul? She said, this must be Shaul. Ki ech yishtachave Shmuel hanavi alav hashalom li'ish acher. How in the world is Shmuel going to bow to anybody else? It has to be that this is the king. Now, that requires a little bit of creative grammar in reading the sentence, because it means that she knows based on the bowing, but she earlier expressed her shock that it was Shaul. So Abarbanel gives you a way to read it in order to get there. But the grammar is somewhat tortured. If you're confused by this whole story at this point, because we're throwing in so much in order for this story to make any sense at all, right? Meaning, I don't know what she actually did. I don't know what Shaul asked her for. Shmuel, Shmuel Hanavi, Shmuel Dalablach, like what did he say? I don't know how she knew it was Shmuel. I don't know how she knew it was Shaul. The text is omitting so much that the Midrashim and the Mefarshim are falling all over each other trying to understand, right? So how do we understand any of this? We're going to get to that, because I think that it's actually making a point by doing that. So we're not quite there yet. I don't know if we'll get to it in the next 10 minutes, maybe next time. But if you're confused, you're in good company, and I believe there's a reason. I don't think it's random. But first, Pasuk Yudalid. Shaul asks her to describe Shmuel, and she says, Ish Zakein, and he's got a me'il. So take a look, please, at the medrash that I brought you in source number 15. And this is based on the fact that Shaul needs to ask her what he looks like. So the Medrash says, Gimel Devarim Ne'emru B'mishamala Meis Bizichuro. There are three things that are said about somebody who brings up the dead Bizichuro, a term we used in the Gemara for bringing somebody up with the oath. Hama'alehu ro'eh ve'eino shomea kolo. The one who brings him up sees him, but doesn't hear him. So in other words, the Ov, this woman here, can see him, but she can't hear him. Misha tzarichlo, shomea kolo veino roeu. The one who needs him, which is the petitioner, Shaul, will hear his voice but not see him, which is why he needs the description. Umishen tzarichlo, lo shomea velo roe. And the one who doesn't need him at all and isn't involved neither sees nor hears. So the two guys who are with him, which we are now saying are not just two guys, but are Abner and Amasa, they have no idea what's going on whatsoever. To them, it's like the Ov is sitting there and Shaul is sitting there, and they have no idea what they're talking about. Now, there's more to be said about this. I'm not going there right now. But in terms of how she knows that this is Shmuel, the answer is because of the me'il, right? Because of this tunic that he is wearing. And you look at Rashi, Rashi says in number 16, Shaya Ragil will vosh me'il, because he always wore a me'il. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, me'il katon ta'ase lo imo. His mother made him a small me'il, and you know that every year she brought him a new me'il. I have no idea how long Hannah lived and whether she's still doing this. Ube me'ilo nikbar, and he was buried in a me'il. V'chein Allah, and so he ascended. V'chein Allah lavo yamdu b'levusheihem, and he says in the future, t'chias ha-mesim, they're going to rise in their clothing. And yes, we are going to have to come back to that one. Among the questions about life after death, that's one of those we have to deal with. Basically, I have three life after death questions I want to get to. Number one, is the soul associated with the body that it inhabited at the time of its death? Meaning, ish zakein oleh. Right? He is ascending as an old man. So is that really a thing? That it's, you know, looking like he looked when he died? Number two, is the soul associated with the clothing that it wore at the time of its death? Is that why he's wearing a mi'il? And number three, Shaul is panicked, according to the Gemara, about the Day of Judgment. Are you really trying to tell me that those who passed away are not aware of what's going on in this world? Those are the three questions that I'm going to want to deal with. Okay. We have two choices. Either I can address the question of why this section is so vague, or I can take questions about everything that we've done in the last 20 minutes. We could just wait with the questions till next week, or we can do the questions now before people forget them. What would you like? I'm good either way.
I like A.
A, why is this section so vague? Are we good with that? Okay, so we'll do that, but then next time I want to come back to people's questions in the beginning, so write your questions down. Don't forget them, please, okay? That's a deal? Ruth, you okay with that? I know you had a question you wanted to ask.
Yeah, I'm just asking a translation.
Oh, okay, ask me the translation, that's fine.
You use word at the here goes funny.
Yeah.
And you said it was worrying, maybe anxious or something.
I translated it two ways. One was frighten and one was agitate.
So doesn't mean anger?
So roges can mean anger and can mean agitation. Example, when Yosef sends his brothers, after they know it's Yosef, he sends them back home, he says, Al tirgizu badarech. It doesn't mean anger, it means to become, you know, so involved in their whatever that they're gonna, yeah. So that's why I say agitation. I think it fits better than anger. Okay. So, question, why is this so vague? We don't have any clarity here of whether she knew to call Shmuel, how she knew to call Shmuel, how she knew it was Shmuel, how she knew it was Shaul. So I came up with a thought, which I don't think I came up with it independently. I think it was based on something I had seen from Rav Bazak. And I brought you Rav Bazak's comments here in source number 17. I admit, I didn't think we were going to get to it, so I didn't translate it. But I'll read it with you. Al derech hapshat, on a simple read, kashel his bases al pasuk zeh. It's difficult to base ourselves on this pasuk. He's talking about this whole business of how she knew and who and all that. He says, in the simple read of the psukim, there is no way to answer the question that he's trying to address here. Dome, he says, it appears. He says, He thinks that the psukim are intentionally omitting the ways of nichush. Nichush being omen reading, sorcery, and all of those things. He says the text is deliberately obscuring that. Velo pirei ketzed nasu masei ha'ov. It doesn't say how to carry out ov activities. Hakoshi mi pasuk hu efo mechuvan. He says the problems that we have with the text are intentional. Zu darko shel hamikra. This is the way of the text. Lahavlit et yachaso ashalili lemaasei hakishuf. And the point is to make clear that it looks down on, and it doesn't want to go into acts of magic, witchcraft, sorcery, and so on. So we are deliberately left in the dark about what's going on in this section. You follow? And I think he's right. I think it's true. I think the psukim have no interest in taking the time to explore what an ov is and what an ov is doing. And the worst thing would be if people were to read it and then start saying, well, now I want to do it. So you're not going to get any information. You follow? Okay. We can take a couple of questions. It's 227. So we can take a couple of questions about this section that we just did. Yeah, Claudette.
It's not a question, just a statement. You just said that the writer doesn't have no interest in going into details about the over and the actions, right?
Yeah.
I think the writer is also there to tell us how low Sheol sunk. This whole story is, you know.
What do you mean?
I mean, how far away he has moved from himself from God.
Well, I think it's telling us exactly how far, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
I think it's there to tell us and to emphasize on this.
Oh, it's because that helps to spell out how far Sheol has sunk. I hear that. I hear that. Thank you. Ruth, were you going to ask something?
Maybe I misunderstood, but I thought at the beginning when you said that Sheol came, that she knew who it was because he was...
From being with... No, that was Abarbanel's problem. Abarbanel asked, if you really believe that it's Avner, then she must know. But the answer is going to be, from the Medrash's perspective, that maybe Avner also disguised himself. That would have to be, and the Medrash doesn't speak to this question, but presumably the Medrash could suggest that. Yeah. Sandra?
I thought she'd already caught up.
Yeah. Sandra? I'm sorry, I need you to be louder. There's a lot of noise in the hallway.
Okay.
Didn't Charles? Yeah, we're going to talk about the Me'il. We're not there yet. I wanted to have a nice discussion about this Me'il that we're talking about. But I will note for you that it could be it's Shmuel's Me'il that gets torn and not Shaul's. But we're gonna come back to the. I mean, we read it both ways when we read that story.
I remember that my way of thinking
was Shmuel. Yeah, and it really could be, but it might not be. All right, I see there are more questions. Write them down, please, and we'll start with them, God willing, next time. Thank you very much, and I wish you a good Shabbos.